at its core, poverty is about pushing down instead of having an opportunity to go up.
41,000 Syracuse residents were below the poverty line in 2016. What does poverty look like?
Deciding whether I feed my child or whether I put gas in the car to go to work.
What does it feel like?
It's, generally speaking, lack of access to opportunity.
The facts, the figures, the stories of our community.
Syracuse's 2016 poverty rate was 13th worst in the United States.
This is City Limits, a poverty project.
As we begin City Limits, I wanted to get out and spend some time with people dealing directly with poverty, those struggling, people providing services, and those working on understanding the causes and impacts. We've all heard the shocking statistics of Syracuse's standing against other cities for overall poverty and concentrated poverty, and I'll get to those in a few minutes. But first, let me share with you just a few stories here in our city.
Love it here. The other day, I noticed a young lady that lives here has a mat in front of her apartment, and it says "Home Sweet Home," and I was like, I'm interested in getting me a mat for my front door, and I was like, wow, I love that, because this is home sweet home for me.
Cheryl lives here at the YWCA Women's Residence, just south of downtown Syracuse.
We pay rent here. This is a program, and it's not permanent housing, and they prepare us to go out and live in the real world, and in the real world you have to pay your rent and pay your rent on time so you won't be homeless.
That's been one of her problems, staying in an apartment.
One of my issues coming here was being evicted. I'm what you call the working poor, and I would never pay my rent. I was not responsible. I would get an apartment and fix it up really, really, really nice and work hard, and I would always get evicted.
One of the things she's working on while living here is living on a budget.
So I've lived in this shelter before, and I lived in a domestic violence shelter before, and I've lived in the shelter at the Salvation Army before. And each time I came out of those shelters, I was not prepared to go out and live.
She thinks some programs are a waste if they don't make sure people will be successful. She finds a lot of people are like her.
Yes, transitioning, because normally, and even it happened to me, we just end right back up in the shelter, and all that money that has been put out for me to go and live in permanent housing, it's like wasted money, you know?
She's certainly an insider in this area, and that's not her only problem with how money is put into public housing.
But like most of the affordable housing, it's like in the projects, and projects is not what most of us need, especially if we're coming out of here from, we're recovering addicts or domestic violence. This is not a safe environment. We need a safe environment to go to once we leave here for permanent housing.
For now, Cheryl has a job working with the elderly. She's trying to learn to live on a budget, improve her transportation situation for access to a better job, but mostly appreciating the safe haven the YWCA residence offers.
Yes, I'm a recovering addict, and living here has helped me to maintain my clean time. I come from a background of domestic violence, and my perpetrator has tried to come here and interfere in my life, even just recently, and he can't. I'm protected here. I'm protected from all of that.
I love my apartment, actually. I like being here. It's a safe environment for me and my daughter.
Mandy also lives here at the YWCA with a toddler.
I do my daily routine with my kid every day. I take her to daycare. I come back here. I work. And that's about it. Do what I gotta do. Pay my rent.
She has her own set of challenges to try and get a more permanent foothold on a life for her and her daughter.
It's a challenge, you know. I'm also a recovered addict with a felony on my record. So little things, like certain things, make it difficult for me to, like, find housing and a different job, you know, things like that, you know. Our Wednesdays, I do the NA meetings here. Thursdays, I do life skills. So I try to find things to keep my days busy so I don't have to go back to relapsing or being out on the streets with a two-year-old child.
Having faced homelessness with a two-year-old daughter, stability and structure are the first most important thing. Mandy's not quite ready to tackle school or job training.
No, not yet. You know, I always wanted to go back to school, finish school, get my high school diploma, go to college. I'm actually kind of comfortable right now where I'm at for now until I can better, get something better, you know. I'm struggling. Yes, I'm struggling, but, you know, I'm doing what I got to do, you know, keeping my head above water, do what I got to do for me and my child. So, but eventually I'll find something different.
She knows her felony conviction is going to get in the way of many jobs, yet another challenge for her to get ahead. Though she's not against beating the streets, even in the rain, she says, when it's time to look for something different. For now, it's stability and sobriety.
Just keep attending the NA meetings and staying away from people, places, and things.
And is your daughter a motivation?
Yes, big motivation.
And big.
Yes, a big motivation. And people here, you know, help me through certain things, you know, when I feel like using. And thank you for letting me share.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Poverty is hunger.
Poverty is lack of shelter.
Poverty is being sick and not being able to see a doctor.
Poverty is not having access to school and not knowing how to read.
Poverty is not having a job, is fear for the future.
Fear for the future, living one day at a time.
So what do we learn from glimpses into Mandy's and Cheryl's situations? Well, for me, they confirmed that many people dealing with poverty are really dealing with numerous challenges. And that's not just me talking here. Case manager Stephanie Busby sees a lot of people coming from shelters and trying to take the next step. She has a term for it.
We have dual diagnosed with mental health and drug and alcohol. We have domestic violence and drug and alcohol. Mental health is one of the ones that it can be hereditary or it can be brought on by drug and alcohol as well.
Mental health and drug abuse, domestic violence is, you know, a lot of women, they flee domestic violence. And when a woman leaves her home with her children, so even herself, they leave everything behind. So they need a place to land. And normally the first place is a shelter. But then after a shelter, you know, they have to have a little more stability.
So for Nora Putnam, director of the YWCA Women's Program, that means she can offer them an apartment, living room, kitchen, and bedroom to start to build back up. And then to get going into some permanency, into work for which someone can take some pride, it's solving many different questions.
So say that they find a part-time job, minimum wage, then public assistance is no longer helping with the rent. So what they make doing a part-time in a minimum wage, they just give them enough to pay the rent and they end it in the same place. That is another thing, transportation. Because they may find a job outside the city and how they can transport themselves. There are some areas in here where the bus line doesn't go all day. So even if they pay a little bit more the minimum wage, how they get there? And if you have children and you don't have no help, who will babysit the children if they get, you know, if it's a single mother and the child gets sick, how she goes to work? And then there is drug and alcohol too. You know, these girls struggle a lot to trying to maintain clean. And sometimes cashing hand is dangerous too. So there is a lot of issues involved. Oh.
So Putnam's saying these are the kinds of issues that need to be addressed before improving your education and getting a job you hope pays enough. And Stephanie Busby says trying to make the transition from public assistance to more self-sustaining income has another bump in the road.
Like some of them are going PA, right? And they become employed. And the minute they make $1 too much, they cut them off, right? Now, you're talking about someone that they had their housing, they had their food stamps, they had their Medicaid, right? And some occasion they had a bus pass to go look for work or whatever, right? And then you're going to cut them without putting that intervention in there.
Now, it's not like no one is working on these issues and problems, but maybe not successfully enough.
People that's on drug and alcohol, they need at least 6 months of clean time. A person with domestic violence issue, they need to have all their counseling or the order protections and all that in a safe environment. Mental health, they need to be stable on their medications and stuff, you know, and that can take 6 months to a year as well.
And Nora Putnam finds there can be even another kind of obstacle for people to get up and out of poverty.
If you are, for years, you're living in, you know, in this type of housing, your mind is already made that wherever you go, this is the way it's going to be. You can have a lot of things, and if you still, your mind is still in a poverty basis, you will continue behaving like you're still poor. We see this every day.
To me, two striking things here. So many issues each person faces, and the prevalence of drug and alcohol addiction for many, without treatment options available enough or robust enough.
I had to get away. The addiction had a good hold on me. I was homeless.
One more woman's story points out a lot of these complicated issues.
I do have 7 living children. They are grown. I came into the Y because I needed structure. I too come from abusive background, domestic violence. I feel very secure, very safe. I'm able to get out a lot of things that was holding me back.
Pamela's struggles are not too different than others mired in poverty who are trying to get a step up.
Well, I too am a recovering addict. I was doing drugs and alcohol really bad, and it had me in the dumps, and I didn't like the way I felt. I didn't like the way I looked. I didn't like anything about myself. And I keep looking in the mirror, and a friend of mine told me, "Won't you come on and go to Syracuse, step out on faith." And I did just that. Packed my stuff. I came with 3 or 4 things, and now I got a lot of things. So I'm truly happy.
The addiction in her case actually led to a different kind of physically threatening problem.
Yes, my husband beat me with a tire iron, hit me over the head with a baseball bat. He had me running around looking like a mummy. I got married. I was under the influence of alcohol and drugs when I married him. 2 months went by, and I didn't even like him. I didn't even know him.
Being in a residence program is giving her some respite and stability. Solving the grip of addiction is key for Pamela, and she says she won't shy away from some job training or other education.
Actually, I'm hungry for it. And then from there, because I too like to help older people, you know, I'm a very caring person. I like to help others. The only obstacle I will see is me going back out using. But I do go to a program. I have the NA meeting here. I have a lot of numbers who I can call, you know, people I can talk with. You know, I just stay active in NA. That's the best for me.
So the women who are gracious enough to share their stories, Pamela, Cheryl, and Mandy with a 2-year-old daughter, point out a little of what it's like and the multifaceted approach needed if the community is going to help people out of and reduce overall poverty. Now, none of this was a surprise for Sandy Lane.
And we'd have to solve a number of problems at once.
Lane is a professor of public health and anthropology at SU's Falk College, and in her world, they have a word for that.
In public health, we call that syndemics, the simultaneous or overlapping experience of being faced with a population, being faced with more than one problem at a time.
And it's pretty obvious that the multiple factors compound problems.
Lead poisoning and school failure. Those two things, that's like no surprise, right? Poverty and where you live, and where you live perhaps having elevated rates of gunshots.
Now, Lane digs into these statistics. You may well have heard that Syracuse ranks as the 13th poorest city in the nation. Fully half of children living in the city are in poverty. If you're Black, there's a 41% chance you live in poverty. If you're Hispanic, more than a 49% likelihood. Those are all from 2015 statistics. Lane has looked for some reasons.
I've wondered, okay, how come we have the most concentrated poverty of any comparable size city in the country? And in the late 1980s, we had the highest African-American infant mortality. And zip code 13204 has at times had the highest lead poisoning rate in New York State. We also have the second highest racial disparity in sentencing for drug-related crimes in the nation. I looked at the European-American rate, and this is for the county, and the African-American rate. African-Americans are 98 times more likely to be sentenced for a drug-related crime.
Now, I wanted to make sure I had that right. 98% more, right? Like twice as much? But she said no, 98 times as likely. And it stems from a kind of elephant in the room problem.
One of the huge challenges I see is profound racism. And a lot of white people don't see it because it's not their experience. And so they doubt sometimes that it's true.
In fact, poverty among whites who are not Hispanic in Syracuse is just under 25%, almost twice the national rate. She believes in communities of color. It's not that people don't aspire to lift themselves up.
It's not that families of color are not raising their children to go to college. Many of them do. The kids then leave. Here's, and nobody has said this but me, but I think this is true. We have an African-American brain drain in Syracuse. Young college graduates of color often don't perceive any avenues for success here.
Would you say that that is too part? I mean, does that become sort of the self-fulfilling prophecy or the vicious cycle?
Well, when the people get stopped on the street because they get treated differently, when they leave, then we have a more impoverished community.
Poverty has many faces, changing from place to place across time, and it has been described in many ways.
Most often, poverty is a situation people want to escape.
So poverty is a call to action for the poor and wealthy alike.
A call to change the world so that many more may have enough to eat, adequate shelter,
access to education and health, protection from violence, and a voice in what happens.
And a voice in what happens in their communities.
Poverty in Syracuse is our problem, all of our problem.
Many people have probably driven by the subsidized housing projects on East Fayette Street. The Boys and Girls Club is right across the street from Parkside Commons. But of course, people in the club have direct contact with those families every day.
I think about maybe 80% of the families that come for food pantry every month live right across the street or within the neighborhood of the Boys and Girls Club. So a lot of the families that come here would have to go all the way downtown. Without transportation, without bus fare, that would mean they would have to lug small children, you know, in any kind of weather, downtown.
Amy Wendt is a program coordinator for Catholic Charities, managing a food pantry and links to other services.
You know, it's a lot of young mothers with children, so they're not sure. You know, they're not sure if they're having trouble paying for formula. Well, they don't know about WIC, or if they're having problems paying for their heating costs. You know, they don't know about HEAP. So, you know, it's a learning experience for them, but it's actually, you know, somebody they can go to and say, I need help, you know, where can I get it?
She sees the mounting obstacles too, ranging from basic needs to other familiar problems.
A lot of families, it's substance abuse. They're kind of trying to get themselves in programs and they can't do it. And then other people, it's they're alone. You know, they don't know where they can turn. The biggest families I think that we see here is a lot of young parents with children, and they feel like they don't know where to go. You know, they know they can't afford childcare. They want to work. They want to go to school. But they feel stuck. you know.
Amy's worked on the East Side for 15 years, trying to connect some dots for people, and is seeing a little more help in child care and transportation programs that could mean improved circumstances for some people.
A lot of the families that I work with are trying to find jobs. They don't have the skills to find good paying jobs. So I think that's the biggest obstacle for them, trying to go back to school and getting help with that. I don't know, I see it getting a little bit better, but then I think more is needed to help a lot of these families.
So I think it helps them just to have a safe environment to just be a kid in. Most of the parents that we service, if they do work, they still don't make enough to provide child care for their children. So because we are here, the parents use this as child care. But for the kid, it's a safe place just to come and have a good time.
Tiana Rocket works alongside Amy inside the club right here. Tiana is unit director of the East Fayette Street Boys and Girls Club.
Some kids might not get a meal at home. So they eat three meals a day. They eat school twice and they come here and we serve a hot meal every day. So some kids, teens, come in here just to eat. They'll come in and ask what's for dinner tonight. They actually come just to eat because they might not get food anywhere else.
Her focus is on the children, which can mean just a safe place to play basketball or football or on computers, but also some homework time. She calls it the Power Hour, and programs such as Smart Girls and Passport to Manhood and Career Prep.
I think that some of our children that come in here, I think they need a therapist, whether they're dealing with trauma personally or trauma they've witnessed or trauma they know about from just being in this environment. There's some diagnoses that aren't being met, maybe because the parents don't have health insurance or good enough insurance, or they're not able to pick up on those cues because they don't know what to look for. The behaviors are really to cover something else. It could be abuse, it could be wanting another parent, a father, a mother, and don't have that. And as we know, children try to cover it, mask it, and they usually have a behavior issues because of it.
She knows some of the most tragic impacts of poverty are those on kids, and she's come across no shortage of stories. A lot of times it's hard to reach kids. She says they're very guarded. But every once in a while, there's a positive ending. Tiana told me about one of them.
I'll give you a perfect example. I had met a young man here who was a teenager, and he dropped out of school. He lived with his grandfather, and so his mother was not active in his lifestyle, and he really never had that son, you need to go to school conversation. I was able to persuade him to get his GED. Then we had programs that allowed him to have access to college. And I can say that is my success story. He is now enrolled. He is now enrolled in college, and that was personal for me because be able to reach him, because young men, they carry guns, they sell drugs, it's very hard. And for a young male who's already at the age of 16, 17, it's very hard. And so I was able to reach him when I thought he wasn't listening. He was, and he came in here and he said, Miss, I got my GED. He was so proud to show it to me and to hand it to me. And it was great. So it's because of the programs and people that pour money in here that we're able to see those type of success stories.
Few of the people in poverty have just one problem to solve. It might be no job or a poor paying job or weak job skills. There's the childcare challenge and maybe having to overcome substance abuse or need mental health treatment. We didn't even address issues such as a criminal record, language barriers, an economy not friendly to people just learning a trade or field. And what about children? Poverty and its attendant problems can affect their health, their readiness for school, feelings of security, and even impact hope they might have for the future. Poverty for an individual and entire communities is not a challenge, it's a whole group of challenges that Syracuse must start to solve. This is City Limits, a Poverty Project. I'm Chris Bolt, Syracuse Public Media.
City Limits is a production of WAER Syracuse Public Media and is funded by generous grant support from the Central New York Community Foundation, Grossman St. Amour CPAs, and listeners like you. To support the project, visit the City Limits About page at citylimitsproject.org. Stay tuned for more stories from this series and subscribe in iTunes for automatic delivery of new episodes.